Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the Art History Bay.
Art History Bay Briefs.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Jen.
And we are the Art History Babes. With a baby.
We're coming at you with a baby episode.
Back at it again with the babies.
On Hans Holbein.
The younger.
The younger, not the elder. Do we know anything about the elder? Let's be real.
you know.
What's he all about?
Yeah, what's Hans Holbein the elder about?
He was Hans Holbein the younger's dad.
He made art too.
He was also an artist, and that's about all I know.
All right. I mean, you know,
the light is shining on the younger.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Today,
Hans Holbein the younger is kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
He was a German artist and printmaker. Worked in the Northern Renaissance style. He existed circa 1497. Before November 29th, 1953.
I like it.
I found this in a source and I was like, this is the weirdest timeline. Circa 1497, so roughly 1497, and he died before November 29th, 1953.
You mean, wait.
Yeah.
Not 1953. It says...
Oh, no.
I was about to say, Corey.
He was a vampire.
1553.
It was 500 years old.
500. Okay, so that made it even weirder. Okay, so he is listed as dying before November 29th, 1593, mm-hmm. which is like, why before that day? He didn't die on that day. He just died before that day, right?
I don't know, because I had read that he died of the plague that was spreading through London. So maybe they just are estimating it for the years
like
or
November,
months that it,
November 29th,
the plague was rampant.
Yeah. It's just a really specific date for such a vague statement is how I felt.
True.
But yes. He was born in Augsburg, Bavaria, and learned how to paint from his father, Hans Holbein the Elder, which we don't know very much about, but... He designed stained glass windows and painted portraits with his father. He is widely considered one of history's most influential portrait painters. And he has been credited with bringing Renaissance painting to Britain. So no small feat there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He moved to the Swiss town of Basel with his brother, where he met many humanist thinkers, including Erasmus.
Ooh, I love that name.
He was welcomed by Thomas More into their whole humanist circle, mm-hmm. where he built quite a reputation. His work in humanist circles would go on to influence his artistic work tremendously. For example, one of his most famous paintings, The Ambassadors, which we'll talk about a little later on, exhibits many characteristics of humanist influence, including focus on individuals and the illustration of objects relating to the development of humanity. So the scientific intellectual development of humans.
Right. So a really noteworthy thing to talk about with Hans Holbein the Younger is his time painting in the court of King Henry VIII. Henry VIII probably rings a bell. He had six wives and beheaded two of them. So when Hans Holbein was in Switzerland, that was really during the height of the early beginnings of the Reformation, which made it very difficult for him to establish a successful career because he painted at that time predominantly religious scenes. So he made the journey to London in 1526, and Erasmus wrote a letter of introduction on his behalf addressed to Sir Thomas More, who was a statesman, author, humanist, and closely linked to the Tudor family. More would later be a subject of Hans and helped forge subject of Hans in terms of More sat for portraits. And More helped forge his connection to the Tudors. And Holbein quickly became the primary portraitist of the court of Henry VIII, in addition to designing state robes for Henry, monuments, and decorations celebrating Anne Boleyn's coronation. So Holbein likely made a portrait of Anne Boleyn, but it was destroyed after she was accused of adultery, incest, and treason, and beheaded. He painted a portrait of Henry's third wife, Jane Seymour. After her death, he painted a portrait of Christina of Denmark as part of marriage negotiations. So it was pretty common during this time, you know, when you have monarchs from one country who are in negotiations to marry a princess from another country, you ship your portraitist off, have them paint a nice portrait of the young lady, and then you look at it, kind of like very archaic online dating.
I was like, Tinder?
Swipe left, swipe right. Yeah. So Henry liked what he saw of Christina of Denmark.
Nice.
But
He swiped right.
But she, however, declined his marriage proposal as she, quote, wanted to keep her head. Smart woman.
Smart lady.
Holbein later got into hot water with Henry VIII when he painted a portrait of Anne of Cleves. So Anne of Cleves was from the Duchy of Berg in Dusseldorf. And Holbein painted a portrait of her, brought it back to England. Henry took a look. He was pleased. The negotiations were struck. She comes to London to marry him. And when Henry saw her, he found her plain and dull. And he was pissed at Hans Holbein, just saying, you know, that you made this image too flattering of her. She is not as beautiful as your portrait suggested. Like, I feel duped. He later annulled the marriage.
Rude.
Yes. Despite that.
That's such a bummer. Like, you can't expect the prime selfie image to be, like, right, accurate to reality. You right. know what I mean? Like,
right. And any portraitist, during that time especially, yes, you painted from life, but it wasn't realistic to the extent that it depicted any flaws, if there were any. You know, it was always trying to make people look grand, especially for women who were
the same way a selfie does.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, exactly. For women, it was supposed to be like they're beautiful and they're chaste, you know, because they are a possible bride for you. So that wasn't fair of Henry VIII to do, but he wasn't a fair man.
You know what's funny though is that Anne of Cleves ended up outliving the rest of Henry's wives.
Oh, yeah. So by all accounts, she was
cool. It
worked out. And, like, her and Henry later became friends, and she tried to mend his relationship with his daughters, both Mary and Elizabeth. By all accounts, she was okay.
Yeah,
she,
it worked out all right.
She came out
Anne.
On the better side.
Right.
That Anne, at least. So Holbein retained his status as court painter despite this little snafu. And he famously painted Henry VIII on more than one occasion. His 1540 portrait of the king is most notable. This is where Henry VIII is depicted standing in all his kind of regalia. And he managed to make him larger than life, imposing and regal, despite Henry's growing obesity, a lame leg, and declining health at the time of the portrait. So portraits at this time, again, they're not totally realistic, especially with royalty. You want to make them seem very strong and youthful, depending on the gender, obviously. So he was pretty adept at doing this, and that's why he was so successful painting within the court. Kind of more of his technique for portraits, he made very detailed preparatory drawings to scale of his subjects in pencil, ink, and chalk. Most of the emphasis in his sketches were on the facial details and did not so much focus on clothing or the hands. The outline of the sketches were then transferred via small poked holes through which the charcoal would translate onto the canvas used for the final portrait. In the portraits, Holbein added rich details such as textile patterns, hand position, and background details. He was incredibly skilled at imbuing his subjects with subtle hints of their character. So, you know, like I was talking about earlier, chastity for Henry's wives, intellectualism for men like Sir Thomas More and Erasmus, and overt power and dominance for Henry's portraits. That's not as subtle because he's the king. But everything else, he was good at kind of conveying the character of his subjects in his portraits.
As podcasters, we understand the importance of quality sound. Studio headphones are stylish and sleek with proper sound quality.
If you like on-ear headphones, you know, the ones that make you look like a DJ, you'll love the Regent. With 24 plus hours of active battery life and 20 days of standby life, the Regent is the perfect companion to you at home or on the go.
If you're looking for headphones to meet your more athletic lifestyle, check out the Tray with 9 plus hours of active battery life and 10 days of standby life. Made out of sweat-proof material and has custom wing tips that stay comfortably in your ear no matter how you're moving.
These are only two of the many styles that Studio has to offer, so go to studio.com to check them out. Studio emphasizes the modern Scandinavian design while also providing a product that matches the quality of even the highest-rated headphones on the market for a fraction of the cost. And they provide free worldwide shipping. Use the discount code BABES to get 15% off any purchase. Go check them out. They're beautiful.
In addition to his portraits of nobility, he is known for his Dance of Death series. The Dance of Death was a popular artistic allegory in the late Middle Ages. It was a form of memento mori, which is a concept that Hans Holbein kind of deals with throughout a lot of his work, and it reminds the viewer of the inevitability of death. In this series of 41 wood engravings, Holbein kind of puts a unique spin on the design of the Dance of Death. It was created in 1526 and published 12 years later. And instead of the traditional imagery, which usually depicted a dance in the round of kind of death and dying happening among various characters. There was usually like an insidious death-like character and other characters that were dying or had died, but it was all amongst this dance. A lot of times you'll see depictions with skeletons and things like that. Holbein presented each victim of death in an individual scene. Additionally, he altered kind of the purpose of the allegory. At this point, these Dance of Death images were done often on big frescoes, and they were much more public. And from now on, people were able to learn the lessons being taught by the Dance of Death by reading a book alone instead of the way it had been previously done, which was in a group looking at these big frescoes together. So it was more of a solitary affair.
And they're pretty fun.
Yeah, they are kind of fun.
They're kind of sweet. Check
those out.
They're
kind of fun.
Yeah. Moving on to the painting we mentioned a little bit earlier, The Ambassadors. This work is by far, I would say, his most famous. And it's known for this really interesting optical illusion in the foreground. So if you're not familiar with Holbein, you're probably familiar with this painting, because when you tilt it at just an angle, you can see this skull in the foreground. And it's really bizarre and like, why is it there? It makes no sense. But aside from this interesting optical illusion, there's a lot going on in this painting that is also very intriguing and worth getting into. It was painted in 1533, and it depicts the ambassadors from France to England, Jean de Denteville and his friend Georges de Selve. Probably think that's the best pronunciation I've ever done of anything French. These men acted on several occasions as French ambassador to the Republic of Venice, to the Pope in Rome, and to England, Germany, and Spain. The painting can be divided into a grid and has different components that break up this kind of what we were talking about, humanism earlier, this humanist values. So on the upper shelf that they are leaning on are objects that are concerned with the celestial sphere. So there's a globe, a portable sundial, and various other instruments that are used for understanding the heavens and measuring time. While on the lower shelf, you see reflected these sort of worldly objects. So musical instruments. There's a lute. There's a hymn book, a book of arithmetic, and a terrestrial globe. So if you look at it on a left and right side sort of division, the ambassador on the left side of the painting, Dentivy, is decked out real lavishly. He is looking real fancy, and this is a great example of Holbein's talent. You can just see all of his amazing rendering of textures. The side of the painting has been interpreted as being the very active, lively, action motivated side of the work. He's holding a dagger, so that implies some kind of physical action. Whereas the right side of the painting, the side of DeSelve, he's wearing a more muted fur cloak. He's resting his elbow on a book. So this side of the painting is interpreted as being more about contemplative aspects of daily life. There's the book, the lute, the hymn book at the bottom. And on top of all of this, all of these objects carry significant symbolism. So this painting was done during a tense period that was marked by rivalries between the kings of England and France, the Roman Emperor, and the Pope. So the French church at the time was split over the question of the Reformation. So religious and political strife are reflected in some of the details of the painting, such as a crucifix that's obscured by a green curtain at the top left corner, symbolizing the division of the church. The broken string on the lute, if you get real close up, you can see it's rendered in very exquisite detail, evoking disharmony during the Reformation. And even the open book of music in front of the lute is a hymn by Martin Luther. So all of these things just alluding to what's happening at the time between these big forces in Europe. So super fascinating work. Check it out.
And that's what we got on Hans Holbein the Younger.
We hope you enjoyed our BB episode.
Hans Holbein.
Amazing the artist. The Younger.
The younger one, not the older one.
Although he was probably cool.
We don't know. Thanks for listening.
From Cabernet to Mont.
He was a vampire!
The Art History Babes podcast is made possible by support from our lovely listeners via Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/arthistorybabes to help keep the Art History Babes going and for access to bonus content.